You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey.
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me every week, as he is my co-host,
Tristan Riddell.
And I have a fantastic way to open the show. A little somebody, I'm not really sure who. Sent me this fantastic mug that I'm drinking my morning latte with. It has the To the Journey cover art, and then on the back it says, here's to 100 more in celebration of our 100th episode. I have no idea who might have done this. Do you, Tristan?
Yeah, it's really funny that you, because you texted me and you're like, are you the one who got me the mug? And like, I got a text from Phil. From Philip from Earl Grey, and he's like, oh yeah, Char totally thinks that I'm the one who gave her the mug. And the narcissist in me is like, what the hell? No.
Like, I'm sorry.
No, it was funny because I sent you that gift and totally did not mean it to be a Secret Santa. Like, it was supposed to have my name and like your name in it. And
yeah, well, okay, really here's funny. The thing is, when I got the packaging, there was absolutely no return address or any indication of who sent it at all. And so I thought, oh, this is like a Secret Santa gift. And I know that Philip works at Target, and I thought, well, maybe he ordered it up while he was at the end of his shift or something. And you know, the other thing that occurred to me was maybe it was Lori because it shipped out of Georgia. But just because it ships out of Georgia doesn't mean that's, you know, where the person lives. And so I was kind of guessing, and I knew that Gilfus was getting his Christmas presents together. And I thought, oh, this is what he sent me. How cool. So he was my first guess, but then you were right next in line. If it wasn't him and it wasn't, then I knew it was you. And I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. So thank you very much. I really do enjoy the mug.
You're welcome. I'm glad. I mean, it was the natural step. I mean, like, you and I were talking about getting To the Journey mugs a long time ago, and just the fact that you're so obsessed with coffee and our captain is so obsessed with coffee,
yes,
and you don't have a Trek.fm themed mug is just, I thought, was just criminal. And so I thought, what an excuse to celebrate on 100 episodes as well as a very Merry Christmas.
Well, I'm glad you took advantage of the opportunity. It was a very good time.
It's just so funny that it had so many connections where Philip with Target and Lori in Georgia. And it's just so funny.
And it turns out it's Tristan, my co-host in Chicago. Go figure.
That's right.
So anyway, yeah, I'm going to get you back when you least expect it.
Ooh,
and
that's
in a way
the best type
you do not expect. Yes, with some sort of To the Journey paraphernalia, because you need some now too.
I do need some, and we need to create a whole line of To the Journey memorabilia and collectibles to go along with Nerds Can Be Fit workout regimen that we're going to create someday.
Yes, that is still on the table. We just kind of need to figure out the logistics of it. Like, how are we going to best be able to do it?
Speaking of Nerds Can Be Fit, we got a letter from a listener. And he actually mentions nerds being fit in the letter. And the thing is that we get a lot of letters. We get a lot of emails onto the journey. We normally don't read them. But this one kind of struck us as a little special. And
yes,
we wanted to share it with you guys. And we got the individual's permission to share it with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was A-OK. And we have he sent us a very long message with a lot of personal detail. It was very touching. And so we condensed it for the listeners. His name is Aaron Harvey, a.k.a. Geek Filter on Twitter. And it reads thusly. Dear Char and Tristan, great opening.
Yep. Love it.
I first discovered TTJ when I was waiting for a doctor's visit related to the heart transplant I had last year. It was episode 90, and you talked about Mortal Coil. When I first watched Mortal Coil, I really couldn't identify with Neelix. Although I had already had major and several minor heart surgeries, they always seemed like positive things. I mean, why would you be upset that someone saved your life? Then I was put on the heart transplant list. My heart had started failing. 6 months later, I was in the hospital and my heart was replaced with a donor heart in a 17-hour surgery. When I woke up, my body had to remember how to do things like digest and breathe on its own. All the information I got before the transplant was pretty upbeat. It was going to make me normal. Sure, there were risks, but it would save my life and allow me to do things I've never been able to do before. But they also didn't tell me, or at least didn't emphasize, that you're really trading one problem, a problem that you've had your entire life to adjust to, for a whole new set of problems that all seem to come from nowhere. I totally could relate to Neelix. I had a life-altering event that left me feeling like I didn't have a life at all. I was just sort of the shell of myself. I was so angry, but there was no one to be angry at. You can't be angry at the doctors. They are just trying to help you stay alive. But I could definitely see why Neelix would focus his anger on Seven. Yes, there are things I can't do anymore, but there are new things I can, like go to the gym. Nerds can be fit! And as time goes on, I'm learning what boundaries I can push and which I can't. Keep up the great work, and to the journey!
To the journey!
So, thank you so much, Aaron, for your letter, and we thank you for submitting it to us and allowing us to read it on air. And we're so glad that you're getting better and that you're staying on the positive side. And I am just so happy to hear that one of our listeners likes our show and equates it to a major event in their life, as well as can relate to Neelix.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing this story, because this kind of relates to what we're going to talk about this week. And we're going to get into a little more of the personal side and talk about Voyager kind of helping us through the tougher times, because we've all had them. Life has its ups and downs, or some are worse than others. And Voyager, though, I think, and Star Trek in general, is just there for us because it's, I don't know, forgive this analogy if you don't like it, but I kind of liken it to Linus in his blanket. It's comforting, it's always there, and you can always turn to it when you need a little pick-me-up and some positivity.
And also because, and I like what you said, like in Star Trek in general, is like, because this is a Voyager show, we're going to try to emphasize Voyager where we can. But, you know, Char, you and I are Star Trek fans in general. And so it's not just exclusively Voyager that we run to, but we can cite examples from the pantheon of Star Trek that has helped us throughout our life.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, I remember being a young kid first discovering Star Trek at the age of 6. And watching the original series and just kind of feeling like, hey, you know what? These humans are out there and they're getting along with aliens and they're, you know, they're coexisting with one another. They're on the same ship. And how cool is that? Like, even that little concept alone was comforting to me at a very young age. And I know we're far from the only fans who feel this way. I think we all have our own story. Mm-hmm. But since we're hosting the podcast, we get to share ours.
That's right. Our show.
Yeah, that's right. So it's our stories, and we are going to share them with you all, and we hope that you'll write in and share your stories as well, because we love that.
So I want to know what it was like for you when you first got a hold of Star Trek, and what it, like, how about you preface that with what Star Trek meant to you right when you got a hold of it?
Right when I got a hold of it? Okay, that's kind of just a continuation of what I was talking about just a moment ago at the age of 6. First getting into Star Trek, that really opened my mind to just how marvelous space is and how important space exploration is and how it really might be, in our future, a turning point for humanity. Maybe, just maybe, we're going to be able to solve the problems that we have here by going out there and realizing that we're not alone in the universe. That's definitely something that stuck with me my whole freaking life. That that's something that really does actually give me hope, because it seems like we have such insurmountable problems. Like, think to DS9's past tense, where 10 years in our future from today in 2014, we're going to have sanctuary districts to hide the homeless, because honestly, we just don't know what else to do. This could happen. Yeah. And in fact, when that episode aired 20 years ago, they were making plans in Los Angeles to do that very thing. The writers didn't even know. And then when it came out, I remember just thinking, oh my God, yeah. You know, this is actually happening. But it seems like the closer we get to that time period, the more likely it really is. Star Trek just, it helps me think about the brighter side of humanity. That this is just a couple of ways. In the beginning, though, I think when I was a kid, I always felt a little different, like a mm-hmm. lot of Star Trek fans do. I knew Absolutely. That I just wasn't quite with everybody. I was a little different. I was into things that weren't necessarily popular because geek chic was far from becoming a thing way back then. And I mean, by the very virtue of watching Star Trek, I was an outsider. I was an outcast because I liked weird things. But Star Trek says it's okay to be weird. Weird is good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how about you? Like, okay, what kind of, how did you latch on to Star Trek? What was it that really hooked you?
It's so funny because whenever somebody asks me this question, I have to go back. I mean, like you guys, the listeners, if you've been with us from the beginning, you've heard our origin stories several times, especially mine, because I was literally raised on Star Trek. I was born into it. And it's kind of funny because also, as longtime listeners know, that I'm a religious person. And one thing that people ask you in my faith is, you know, when did you decide to become a Christian? And one of the most immature things that you can say is, oh, well, I've always been a Christian. And that's not how it works. It's like you have to decide of your own free will. Like you do not want to be born into your father's religion or your mother's religion, because that's not how it works. It's, you know, Christianity isn't a ethnicity. You know, it's a decision. It's a choice. And so, like, I know this is a stretch of an analogy, but that's kind of how I feel with Star Trek, about like how I was raised with it. I was surrounded by it and I've always loved it, but it probably was around probably the same age as you, like around like six, like five or six, like when I was really able to like actually think about it and like not just stare at the pretty colors. And
ooh, phasers.
Yeah. And so it was towards the end of Next Generation where I started really understanding the complex themes. I mean, obviously I was six, so I wasn't able to get all of it, but I was able to understand, oh, this episode's about racism, or this episode is about sexism, or this episode is about how we need to take care of the planet that we have. And so I'd say around the same age as you. And I remember just like taping episodes like crazy of Next Generation, and like this, all the fanfare was going on because they were towards the end of the show and they were going to start doing movies. And so that's pretty much like around the fifth or sixth season of Next Gen is really when I latched on, because I loved how I'm such a sci-fi nut and an effects nut that I just love that you were able to tell these amazing stories that meant something, but also look really cool while you're doing it.
True that. I like so many of the things that you just said. I think a lot of people are raised into a religion because that's what your parents mm-hmm. do, whatever, you know, denomination you're a part of. And I do think that a lot of people just do keep going with their faith because that is what they were raised and that's what they know. But I think it's incredibly important to take a step back and actually think about why you believe what you believe and make that conscious choice to either continue to believe mm-hmm. what you believe or rethink it and do something else.
Absolutely.
And then with Star Trek, same kind of thing. I think it's a very conscious choice to really become a fan and really understand it and really believe in the overall message that Star Trek is about. I mean, you either do or you don't, I think.
Yeah, it's so funny because I know, like, there's so many parallels between the two, and like, but it's just, when you try to look at it from an outsider's perspective, you're like, you're talking about a phenomenon that is life-changing and life-altering, and it changes the way that you think and how you feel about things. It makes you reflect on your own personality, and mm-hmm. you go to this on a very regular basis, and it's a point of pride in your life, and the other one's a religion. You know, like, it's
and we're not saying that Star Trek is a religion, not necessarily. I know for some people it really is.
Yes, and that's the thing that I'm talking about, is this, that, like, non-geeks just don't get it. I'm not, like, Shar and I are not trying to say that Star Trek is just as important as your personal deity. We're not saying that at all. What we're saying is, is that, like, there's a lot of analogies that you can cross it with, We're not trying to measure the importance. We're just trying to say in the decision-making process, it's very similar.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely parallels. I also like what you said about like when you were really starting to get it, mm-hmm. like getting the underlying themes. I remember when that happened for me, that was age 10. Let's be honest, because for four years, I really just liked the idea. Oh, they're in space. That's cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Same.
You know, then when I started getting some higher brain functions going, I remember the summer that I got really into the original Star Trek movies. I mean, I would watch 2, 3, and 4 almost incessantly every day, summer vacation between my 5th and 6th grade year. I would watch them almost every day. And I don't know. That's what really kind of when I really started to solidify Star Trek as a deeper thing for me. The end of TNG is also another pivotal moment, just because I think it was just the fact that there was so much buzz going on. TNG yes. was ending, they were going to make the movies, and DS9 was going on, then we were going to have Voyager, and it was just, I mean, that was the golden age, as a lot of people call it, of Star Trek, and it was just mayhem. It was constant new stuff. Boom, 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 boom. It was exciting.
Yeah, I think the reason why, because you and I are relatively the same age, and like I think I like around that time, like when Voyager was on the air, and a little bit before that was all the fanfare with, like with what you talked about TNG going off and everything like that. That was a big deal, and so like I was going into middle school, you were leaving middle school, and that has to be the most turbulent time. For any person's life, at least in America, and I at least from my perspective, like from what I've talked about with other friends and other people and that I've had conversations with about the most turbulent time, I freaking hated middle school, and I hated that time in my life. Not in my life. I mean, I hated that period that I had to go, you know, to middle school, and I hated the everything about the school. And it was just so funny because all of that was happening. Like, you and I were lucky enough to have all of this happen around Star Trek. We were in the golden age of Star Trek while we're going through this crappy time that everybody has to go through in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really matter how bad your day was, how awful things were at school or with your friends fighting or whatever was going on. There was always new Star Trek to look forward to at that time.
That's right. Yes, that's right. I mean, oh my gosh. Lightning just struck my brain from Fargo.
Whoa.
Seriously.
It's a long distance.
There was always new Star Trek to look forward to. Think about how foreign of a concept that is now. It's like, yes, we have a third movie that's coming someday down the line. Yes, like it's always kind of, it's all academic at this point. But like back in the day, you know, when you and I were younger, we were like, okay, well, like if it's summertime, we'll just watch some reruns and then we'll get something new in the fall. There was a time we were getting 2 new episodes a week of Star Trek.
Oh.
2 new episodes a week.
That's why I lived for weekends, man, because where I was at, new episodes of Star Trek, both Voyager and Deep Space Nine, came out on Sunday and Saturday, respectively. Sunday was Voyager, Saturday was Deep Space Nine. And so I always had something to look forward to, and a lot of times my dad would watch it with me. It was kind of a ritual.
Yeah.
And so I always took comfort in that. Like, Star Trek is just kind of the thing that I do with my dad. It's the big thing that we have in common, and I've said it before, I watched Star Trek because my dad watched Star Trek, but then when I started really watching it, like if I would just have a videotape on to have on the background or something, he came up to my room to say hi or whatever, and he would just sit down and watch it with me. And that was always nice.
Yeah, I mean, Star Trek is a big connection with family. I think a lot of people, when they think Star Trek, they think family. I think that does happen. I mean, and...
I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I'm thinking of my mom right now. Back in this era, you know, the mid-90s, when my dad and I would watch Star Trek incessantly, and I wouldn't be doing my chores, or my dad wouldn't be doing anything around the house, and my mom would be cleaning the house or something. She's like, you guys watching your Star Trek again? Haven't you watched this episode for the 5th time already? Could you please move on? I mean, she doesn't get it. She, I think she almost resented Star Trek just because we watched it so much. But I don't know. I've talked about how junior high was actually a very good time for me. It was high school that was a really bad time for me.
Right.
That's it
right.
was my personal hell. So I'm going to talk about high school and you're going to talk about junior high. I think more people are going to relate to junior high, though, just because, man, adolescence is turbulent.
Well, I think that like you and I must have been going through the bad time together, because when you were in high school, I was in junior high.
True.
And so I just find that funny that you and I had to have been on very parallel paths at the same time. Not just like, oh, I had a bad time in sixth grade, you had a bad time in sixth grade. No, when I had a bad time in sixth grade, you had a bad time freshman year. And
yeah, pretty much. Isn't that strange?
And we were watching the same episodes for relief.
Yeah, we really were. And I mean, as far as Voyager goes, specific comfort episodes that I can think of right off the bat. This may or may not seem like an odd choice. I don't know, but I'm going to throw it out there. What about Night?
Night.
Night, the season 5 premiere, where we find out that Janeway has been a little bit of a recluse for the last couple of months. She's very depressed. She is harboring a lot of guilt. She's had a little too much time to think about Voyager's journey thus far, and she blames herself for getting everybody stuck out in the Delta Quadrant, sees the decision as a poor one, and I remember when this episode came out, you know, it was 98, and I was in the midst of clinical depression in high school. It was my junior year, and, you know, I wasn't feeling too hot about anything at that point. I was really just not doing too well at all, to be honest. I hated school. Now, granted, I had a really good family life. But everybody just kind of dismissed my depression as, well, you're a teenager, it's just the teenage blues. And I believed it myself. I just thought, this is just what you go through when you're 16.
Yeah.
No, looking back, it was far worse than that, because there were not ups. There were just downs. And I was constantly down, and I didn't know why. And it's because I needed meds. But anyway, to see Knight and to see that my favorite captain also was dealing with depression. Now, granted, I don't necessarily like the way they handled depression in that show, because you can't just wrap it up in one episode. Of course you can't. But to see that even the greatest of heroes are fallible, and that this is not something that happens to the weak. This is not something that happens to a certain people of a certain walk of life. Depression can strike anybody at any time for any number of reasons. And I took a little bit of comfort in that, because I felt very weak because of my depression, because I didn't understand it at that point. I didn't realize that I was a bad... Well, I kind of blame myself. I thought I was a bad person. I was a weak person. I just needed to have the willpower to get going and pick myself up and just, come on, you have a good life. What is wrong with you? I think a lot of people who deal with depression think about that. It's none of that. You're not a bad person. You are not a weak person. You're dealing with kind of an injury in your brain, in a way, an imbalance, and you need help. If you broke your leg, would you not go to the doctor and get a cast? Of course you would do it. Nobody would even question it. It's the stigma of mental illness.
I like that you equate that with Knight and with Janeway. And if you think about the existential crisis that almost every captain went through. I don't think we really saw it with Captain Kirk while the TV show was going on, but we have Picard in Family and Sisko at the end of season 6 when he has to go home and go back to Earth and really think about, you know, what it means to be a captain, what it means to be the Sisko. And and then you have Janeway and Knight, and then you have Archer when he gets home at the end of season 3 and the beginning of season 4, and he realizes how many people he's lost, and even though he saved Earth, has he lost himself? And I like that Star Trek does this to their leaders. They have these moments when they are truly human, and human is fallibility, and human is depression, human is remorse and guilt, and it's great that they show that, because when they show that, people like you and me watch it and realize, oh, if they're going through it and they can get on the other side of it, so can we.
Absolutely. Also, I think it's a very good idea to be introspective like that. Question yourself and think about what has happened and process it. I think that's very necessary for all of us to be doing that.
And also, I went through, looking back, like, at the time, I didn't know I was depressed when I was younger. And because I didn't want to be one of those people. You know, like, I didn't, you know, I didn't want to be the cliche. I didn't want to be the person who was a sad teenager just to be sad and everything like that. And
right. This was before emo kids and all that sort of thing. Like, you know, I think in my day there were goth kids where that was a trendy thing. But I'm sorry, you don't want to be that way. It, really, if you are actually depressed, you don't want to be depressed. It's hell. No. It's awful.
It is. It's awful. And I didn't know what I was at the time until a friend of mine who was a great deal older than me, who's 9 years older than me, and we've been friends for, I don't know, 15 years now. But he started asking me all these questions. He's like, how much are you sleeping? And I was like, well, I can't really get out of bed. Like, I get my 8 hours, but then I'm just exhausted for the rest of the day. And he said, he's like, okay, well, he's like, do you have any phantom pains? And I was like, well, I could just kind of, I'm achy all the time and I don't understand it. Like, I'll work out, but I don't work out that hard, you know? And it's just all these questions were leading up. And he's like, well, I think we need to help each other out. And I had a very different experience than you. I didn't go seek help. I didn't go get medication, and I'm not saying that I shouldn't have. I'm not saying that at all. And what I'm saying is that it was treated very different in my household than yours. And it was basically me surrounding myself with friends and family who showed me love and affection and time and patience. And
very important things.
And that's what got me out of it. And it wasn't to the point where, like, I was a burden on everybody else in the family. And it wasn't like, I think my mom and dad were, looking back on it, my God, they were just absolute saints because they were so patient with me. And there was only one time when my dad sat me down and said the words, you need to get over it. and he chose.
Now, I'm sorry, just to clarify, when did this happen? Like, what age were you?
I was 15 going on 16 at that time.
Okay.
Yes, this was not in middle school. This was in high school. This was 15 going on 16. Like, there were so many things going on in my life. So many changes. And not just, I'm not just talking about puberty, but that also does not help anything, because when you're going through puberty, when you feel something, like have a little forgiveness for teenagers once you get older, because when you feel something as a teenager, you're feeling it almost 10 times worse or more than you would as an adult because of the chemical changes that are going on.
Yeah, clinical studies have proven this. It's a real thing. Teenagers feel really high highs and really low lows.
This is scientific and quantifiable, is that, like, when a kid is sad, they are what you would refer, like, when they're just, like, having a sad emotion, you would feel crazy depressed at that moment. Right. And actually, my pastor is the one who explained this to me and it kind of, like, got me on the right path of, once I understood that, I was able to take control a little bit more of my moods and my emotions. And I don't know, like, coming from the Midwest in a small town, a smallish town, that was not a medicated town. Living in Chicago, everybody's medicated. But where I come from, like, that just wasn't really an option. It wasn't so much like you're against it. It was just like, it just didn't really come into your consciousness. And so my parents were very patient with me, and I watched a lot of Star Trek in the basement, and they said, they're like, hey, you're spending a lot of time away from the family, and, like, you know, you're just, like, sitting down watching TV and working out, and is there anything that we can do for you? And I was like, really? I just need to be alone right now. And they're like, okay, whatever you need to do to get through this. And then we moved on. I got through it, and it was fantastic. And because of the self-introspection, I know I talked for a long time, but because of the self-introspection that you talked about with Star Trek and how I was able to utilize that and see these other characters, these beacons of light, tackle enormity of problems and get over them and accomplish them through their guile and their wits and also the help of others, it made me realize that I could do that with myself and with my family. And it just, I don't know, like, I got on the other side.
That's awesome, and I'm glad that you did get on the other side. And I do think a support system, a really good support system, is absolutely crucial no matter what the situation. If there's any upheaval, the best thing you can possibly do for yourself is surround yourself with really good friends and family, people who support you and are willing to listen and not judge you and only love you. And it sounds like you had just that, and that's wonderful. And sometimes you don't need to have medication if it's a depressive situation like you had. Sometimes it's just a matter of talking it through or whatever it is that, you know, whatever works. I mean, everybody's a little bit different.
Yes, and that's the thing is that, like, by saying I didn't need medication is not me saying that nobody needs it. Like, what you and I are saying, the same thing, is that whatever works, some people need it, some people don't. Do I think people are overprescribed sometimes? Absolutely. If you look at the money that is flowing in this country, do I think people are underprescribed sometimes? Absolutely, because everybody is different.
Yeah, I've actually been on both sides of that coin, medicinally speaking, where doctors have wanted to be too conservative with medication. Other times they're more than happy to pump it up and it's too much. And I'm just one of those people that does need medication, just for the record. And I held off on doing that for a long time. I mean, my depression set in, I think, the summer, I was 15 going on 16. It set in just right on the verge of that summer. And I did not actually see a doctor until I was 19. It's a long freaking time. It should have happened a lot sooner, but it took that long to just finally say, okay, this is a problem and it has to stop. It was affecting my daily life and everything that I was trying to do with my life.
And there was, to bring this back onto Star Trek, there was the Harry Kim episode with the space herpes, where...
Don't tell me you got space herpes.
No, I did not get space herpes, thankfully. Glow. I didn't have to take any kind of space penicillin or anything
that.
But there was a huge commentary in that episode about antidepressants. Like, that episode was about antidepressants and about how he was in love with this woman and he wasn't able to be with her. And the doc and Janeway are like, why don't you just take this hypo spray? You'll feel better. It'll be great. And he's like,
You're
no.
Right.
He's like, I need to feel this. I want to feel in love. And even if it feels like I'm going to die, I need to feel this and get on the other side of it on my own. And a lot of people took that as an anti-drug or anti-prescription message. And that I don't think that's the message at all. It's knowing what you need and sticking to your guns.
Oh, that's such a great example. Yeah. One thing that people complain about regularly as a side effect of medication is it makes them too level to the point where they're numb. They don't feel anything. And that might have very well been Harry. He didn't want to numb out these emotions. He wanted to feel them for better or for worse. Sometimes that is the case.
And think about, I know a lot of people don't like Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, but there's also another great message in there. About how
I need my pain.
Yes, exactly. Like that is such an amazing speech, and that's so connected with me when I was a young kid, because you're on the precipice of feeling everything for the first time. Your first kiss, your first heartbreak, the first D on a test, maybe your parents splitting up, or like the loss of a family member. You're gonna feel that for the first time. Like, everything has its first time, and usually that happens as a young person. And when we see this montage of Spock's pain and McCoy's pain, oh my God, McCoy's pain. And then, of course, they infer Kirk's pain. We all know what they're talking about. We don't see it, but we know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then, like, McCoy and Spock are both, mainly McCoy, is just like, no, you have to do this. I feel so amazing. This is... I'm so glad to have this weight lifted. I feel like this is a comment on drugs, depression, and religion. And then Kirk, he's like, no, I need my pain. I need my pain. It's made me who I am, you know, and it's...
Yeah, and it's true, right? I mean, everything that we go through in life, even if it's completely awful, it shapes who we are. And without it, we would be a completely different person.
That's right. I mean, like, you are who you are today because of your past experiences and decisions, and... we can go on and on about how this interacts with Star Trek. If you look at Tapestry from The Next Generation with Picard, you know, like, it's like you take out one thread and you ruin the entire tapestry. It just unravels everything. And like, yeah, do I have regrets? Because I'm, yeah, yes, I do, because I'm a human being. But at the same time, I love who I am today, and I love where I am, and I love who I'm married to, and I love my mm-hmm. job. And I wouldn't have been here unless people slammed the door in my face, unless people told me no, unless people stomped on my heart, unless people took advantage of me and lied to me and cheated me. I would not be where I am today if that didn't happen to me.
Yeah. And you know what? I think we don't give enough credit to our own failures.
Absolutely.
You know, I think our culture, North American culture, tries to shun failure. Like, oh, you made a mistake. You know, heaven forbid, you know, you recover from that as fast as possible. No, I think we learn more from failure than we do actual success. That's where the mm-hmm. real lessons come from. I know that's where a lot of things that I have learned in my life have certainly stemmed from. Just because of what I've gone through, you know, physically, emotionally, mm-hmm. stunning myself through years of an eating disorder. Emotionally, I held myself for many years in that time period and just didn't really progress much as a person because all I really cared about was withering away. Yeah. That's what I wanted to do. That was my life. That was how I defined myself. There's not a whole lot else you can add to that equation when that is the very narrow focus of your lens. And eating disorders are a very hard thing to understand. And I dealt with it for a few years. I'm better now. Mm-hmm. I have a wonderful life. Just like you, I am married. I have the most wonderful husband in the whole wide world. We have a wonderful life. And I actually enjoy life now. I couldn't have imagined being this person 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, man, without that, though, would I appreciate everything that I have to date? Not in the same way. Not one damn bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that I feel like there's so many times we go throughout our lives and we realize that we, like, even if we wanted something 10 years ago, we wouldn't have appreciated it if we got it.
You know, that's just the thing. 10 years ago, I wanted exactly the kind of life that I have.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be more financially stable and have a good job. I wanted to have a husband and have a nice place to live and all of that. I wanted nice things. I wanted to have a nice, decent life. Nothing extravagant, just a nice, comfortable life.
Right.
Because I didn't have it back then. I was poor. I was in college. And I was starving myself. You can't really have all these things when you're doing that to yourself.
And just like how Riker thought he wanted his own command.
Right?
But then he realizes that maybe he likes where he is right now and it's not the right time.
Right, and there's also that too. Sometimes you don't have to be you don't have to succumb to the pressure to succeed in the way that everybody thinks that you're going to do, like career trajectory.
Yes.
You know, not everybody wants to be the CEO.
Oh, and I'm so glad that you brought that up because Star Trek helped me out a lot with career trajectory. And this is, you know, both Shar and I are Americans, and in the American consciousness, we very much define ourselves by what we do. And when people ask you, what do mm-hmm. you do? They don't mean like, oh, what are your hobbies? Like, oh, I podcast or I go home and paint. You know, they don't ask, what they're saying is, what do you do for money is what they're asking.
Right. What's your job?
What's your job? And as Americans, we very much define ourselves by our jobs. And there was a time when I was out of work for a very, very long time. And I was doing freelance stuff. I was doing just enough to get by, but I love having a full-time job. I am not one of those people who freelance as their career. I applaud those people who can do that, but I love to know where my next paycheck is coming from.
It's tough. Yeah, and I did it for a while too.
Yeah, it's a very tough way to live. But I was interviewing with this position for a long time, and I thought it was my dream job. And I was like, this is a perfect position for me. I want this. I need this. And I invested so many of my emotions in it. And they told me I had the job, but then took it away from me at the last minute. And oh. I was an emotional wreck. I broke down that night. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do it. And then I find another job. It turns out to be great. And then 3 months after I find that new job, the company who was supposed to hire me but then told me no is now out of business.
Boom. Roasted. How about that?
And I'm not saying, like, I'm not trying to do any kind of schadenfreude here. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, it shows them for not hiring me. Like, they would have stayed in business. You know, what I'm saying is that these quote-unquote failures that we perceive as failures are not always failures. It's very much life closing a door because that door needs to be closed. And right. we would have been worse off if we got what we wanted. And yeah. there's so much of that in Star Trek. There's when you look at the Doctor and about how he wants everything right now. He wants you look at him like he's a child. He's like a very advanced child, but he's like I want full-fledged emotions. I want a family at the drop of a hat. I want a name. I want hair. You know, like he wants all these things. But like it turns out that he's not like he wanted a family, but he didn't want to grow with a family. He didn't want to find a wife and then have children. He wanted the full package right then and there. And so many people I know want that.
Yeah, instant gratification. And life just doesn't work that way, not yeah. usually. And it doesn't always work for the best. I have always thought that the universe kind of puts us in our place where we need to be at the right time. And it sounds like that's exactly what happened to you with this job situation. You weren't meant to be at that other job for whatever reason. And yeah. you may never really know. But to put it full circle, you ended up where you needed to be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, that reminds me of one more story. And then we should probably close off the show. Because we are taking it long now. I had my own period of unemployment, and this happened a few years ago, shortly after I graduated from college. I was still living in the college town where I'd been going to school, and in a town of this size, there weren't a whole lot of jobs. So even though I was a fresh graduate and I definitely had marketable skills, getting a job was downright impossible. I mean, I applied everywhere for jobs that I really didn't even want that were paying minimum wage. I couldn't even get an interview with like a pizza place and make minimum wage there for any amount of hours because it was a college town and everybody worked 10 hours a week, you know, for very low wages because that's what students would do. Mm-hmm. Someone like me who wanted more than that to support a family because my husband was still in school for that one last year was just not working. I ended up having to commute back to my hometown 2.5 hours away working at the coffee shop that I worked at right out of high school because I could make more money doing that than I ever could back just in town where I lived. Jeez. I stayed with my parents for a few days, worked like 3 or 4 shifts, and then went back home and stayed for a few more and did it for several months. The way this connects to Star Trek is this is the time when I reconnected with Star Trek. This was, late 2010-ish. And I was oftentimes just alone in my parents' house. I didn't have my husband. I didn't have my cat. There wasn't a whole lot really to do. And ultimately what happened is I broke out the Star Trek DVDs again and started watching them voraciously and really got back into Voyager and really started watching DS9 and TNG and the movies all over again and having like this renaissance of rediscovering Star Trek and why I loved it so much. And ultimately, that is what led me to Trek FM about a year later. So, okay, check this out. This is relevant. I was looking for ways to explore like my writing and just to do something kind of fun, internet-based, relating to Star Trek, and discovered Hyper Channel way back then in 2011, back when Trek FM was just the news show. Hyper Channel was a video news show hosted by you, Tristan Riddell. And it was that in the Ready Room. That's all Trek FM was back then.
That's all it was.
That is ultimately the gateway that led me to Trek FM, to meeting you, to starting this show, to knowing everybody that's now on the network and what it is today. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah,
crazy.
That is crazy. I didn't know that's how that's
you were
how
my
you
gateway
got on board.
To Trek FM because I saw you hosting that show and I thought, wow, this is really good. And I wanted to be a part of that. And you guys were looking for people to volunteer, and I just thought, yep, sign me up.
That's so funny because it's that's how I got on board too. Is that when I during that time I 2011 is when I got married, and before then. I was living apart from, like, I was living in a different city from my wife, who was my fiance at the time. But she was in the, we were living in different cities, and I was trying to save up enough money to, I was working downtown, living in Chinatown, and I was trying to save up enough money so that I could get married, because I did not want to be one of those kids that just rush into marriage and don't have a place to live, don't have a career. And like, I just didn't want to do that. I wanted to have a stable situation for my future wife. And And so there was a lot of late nights when I was just on my own, no one around. And so I watched Star Trek and it got me through it. And it didn't hurt so much to be away from my future wife and my fiance. And it I binge watched those episodes and it helped me fall asleep and it got my mind off things about how I was in a crappy position in a crappy place. And it made everything tolerable. And then because I was alone so much, I was like, you know what? I'll see what this whole Twitter thing's about. And the first, like my first tweet was about Star Trek. And the first thing I looked up was Star Trek fans because I never had any growing up. Like I had one friend who was a Star Trek fan and then he moved away and that's it. And so I'd never had a community of geeks. And then I found them online. And one of the first people I found online on Twitter was Chris, the CEO of this network. And it was just Hyper Channel and it was just Ready Room. And actually it might not even been Ready Room. Might have just been Hyper Channel. I can't remember.
Yeah. Hyper Channel was the very, very first thing.
And it was just him hosting the show and him doing voiceover. And he doesn't really know this, but I was just like, I could do this better. And but the thing is, like, he had such great content and such great editing and great special effects. And I was thinking, I was just like, I really want to get into voiceover. I love doing it. And he was always talking about how busy he was on Twitter. And
and he is. He still is to this day insanely busy.
Yeah. And so I was just like, hey, you know, maybe I could take a load off your back and do the voiceover for it. And he said, he's like, yeah, sure. I'd love that. And so I filmed some intros and then bam, I was a member of the Trek FM family and the rest is history. And so I had no idea this conversation that you and I started today would be basically a culmination of our Star Trek history that ended with where we are now with Trek.fm. That's just crazy.
Yeah, I had no idea either, but I always wanted to know how you did get involved doing Hyper Channel and Trek FM. So I'm glad it went there because I've always meant to ask you and then just never really have. There wasn't an opportunity. Well, here we go. Now we know.
Yeah, it was me being audacious enough to invite myself into Chris's world by saying, hey, you know, can I take some load off your back? And it was really me being self-serving because I wanted to do voiceover so bad.
Well, you know what? Ultimately, it ended up being a fantastic idea, and I'm glad you did.
I am too, and we give thanks to Chris and his beautiful work at Trek.fm, as all started with Hyper Channel and his beautiful editing and beautiful commentary and his initiative and drive. And he is why Trek.fm is what it is today. So thank you.
Yeah, no question. Thank you, Chris. Well, Star Trek therapy isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on the network this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And so I was biased against it. Even when I started buying the two-disc collector's edition DVDs, I avoided buying any of the even-numbered movies.
Odd-numbered movies.
Earl Grey.
Like they stated in the end of the movie, you know, they thought he'd outlive all of them. And I'm like, yeah, that's what should have happened. We should have seen Data, like, in the, you know, 26th century, like, Data 5.0, whatever we call him.
To the journey! You don't know if she's going to stab him or smooch him.
She's going to smooch him, of course. After dessert.
After dessert.
We all know what dessert means.
Warp 5.
Along with technology and along with trying to study the origins of a lot of different things that we've come to know in the original series and beyond, it's hard to try and deconstruct it without insulting what has come in all of the things that we know of being Vulcan mind meld.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And my thought was, in the next scene, Crusher should have the body of the dead Klingon sitting on the back of her toilet holding a candle. You know, which she would only get to do after Lieutenant Yara's gotten to hold the dead Klingon up to her ear to see if she can hear the ocean.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Everything you would imagine would be in an opening title sequence for this show is in there. I think the shot that really does it for me, the shot that really pulls everything together, is when he dunks the basketball.
Melodic Treks.
So we do know an awful lot of people get associated with Vic Fontaine. He name drops to the nth degree about all the famous people that he hung around with. One of whom is Frank Sinatra.
Axanar.
the official podcast.
When there's a possibility for something to be misunderstood or not clearly explained, it can potentially open up a big hole for a show, because people can end up going down a path that was actually not what somebody wanted to be done.
The 602 Club.
What are those Bond movies that you go back to time and time again because they just do it better?
First of all, Matthew, nobody does it better.
That's true.
It makes me feel sad for the rest.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of our shows. We've got content coming to you every single day on virtually any kind of platform you could possibly think of. And none of these shows would be possible without the help of a sponsor, so let's hear about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, before we go, let's talk a little bit about ways that you can help us, because if you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. First off, if you haven't written an iTunes review, guess what we want you to do? Because that helps us with iTunes search and helping other people finding our show, the more the merrier. And guess what? We have an iTunes review, somebody to thank. So, ApplefreakZero7, thank you very much for giving us a 5-star rating in iTunes in the US store and then writing a short review. Thank you very much for doing that. Also, if you haven't checked out patreon.com/trekfm, please consider becoming a monthly subscriber. There's cool perks in it for you, and it helps us immensely as far as helping with the cost of production and distribution and all that fun stuff goes. So I don't know about you, but I had a really good time discussing this topic with you today. I kind of got a little bit out of it. I hope our listeners did too. And I would love to know their stories about how Star Trek has helped them through the tougher times. One way you can do that is to write us an email. You can go to trek.fm/contact, and that emails us both. Or you can hit us up on the Twitter. And my handle is OTheProfanity. Tristan, where are you at?
I am at The Insane Robin.
Also, there is the Babel Conference on Facebook. Just type in the Babel Conference. And if you're not already a member, please ask to join because it is a closed group, but somebody will let you in pretty quickly. So if you want to join in the conversation there, that is also awesome. All right. Well, as cool as this topic has been, I think we've got another good one coming up next week. What are we doing?
What we're doing next week is really exciting because we are going to have our own Voyager reunion. You may be asking yourself, what is that? Shar and I are going to go deep, deep within our unconscious minds and think about what would Tom Paris be doing 10 years after Endgame? What would Janeway be doing 10 years after Endgame? And you may have already seen this in books and comics and even a little alternate future in Endgame itself, but we are going to develop our own Voyager reunion. And where are they now and what are they doing?
Yeah. And speaking of the Babel Conference, this was a topic that was brought up by a listener. So Joseph Michael Scutt on the Babel Conference, thank you for submitting this topic. We're going to have a blast with it, but not until next week. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!